The good people at Manscaped have partnered with us here at the Beautifully Designed Game podcast with an exclusive offer just for you as a thank you for tuning in. Visit uk.manscaped.com, enter promo code TFT20 for 20% off your order. Believe me, your balls will thank you.
Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Welcome once again to the Beautifully Designed Game podcast. My name is Marcus Marrett, and today I'm very happy to be speaking to a young man who at the age of 23 has already produced work for Match of the Day, Copper 90, and These Beautiful Football Times. Ladies and gentlemen, Tom Griffiths.
Hi, Marcus. Thank you very much for having me on the podcast. As you said, been lucky enough to work for a few really good clients in the football industry so far. I'm a illustrator based in Hertfordshire, and I've spent the last 2 years working for Copper 90.
Brilliant. And so being only 23 and having done what you've already done, can you tell us a wee bit about your background? Though I guess that's probably pretty short given your young age. So have you got an academic art background? Did you study it at school?
Yeah, so I was quite lucky in a sense because so I'm originally based in Hereford, which is in the West Midlands. And after finishing school, I went to a specialist art college, which was, I think, still, they're only one of three in the UK where it's you don't have to go to sixth form. You can sort of go straight to this art college when a lot of people would have to go to sixth form and then go through sort of a foundation before heading on to university. So I was very lucky in that sense. I spent 2 years at that college, and that was really where I began to get into illustration and graphic design, and began to sort of get an understanding that I could sort of take illustration take it in a direction where I could look at my interest of sport and like motorsport as well and football. Really be somewhere I'd be able to take my interest and take it both combined in both my art and my sport interest and combined in both of those. Those 2 years of art college, I then moved on to the University of Creative Arts, which is based in Farnham in Surrey, and studied a three-year course of illustration there, and graduated 2 years ago in 2018.
Okay, fantastic. And so can you talk us about why sports? And we say sports because you've got a really fantastic portfolio of motorsports portraits and a body of work within that field. So what is it about sports generally that you like producing work within?
Yeah, so it's mainly sort of, I guess, the emotions and passions that it sort of brings to the fans and that the players sort of show throughout the games as well, that sort of draws me into it as much as anything. I've always been a massive football fan from an early age, my sort of like motorsport passion came a little bit later, but they sort of all came from sort of the same area, that it's very much about the emotion that you can see on the field, and again the emotion that you can see around the pitch as well from the fans. Trying to capture that in my artwork is sort of an important part of what I try and create.
And I hear stories of you being a pretty solid centre back yourself. Is that correct?
I dabble in it a little bit. I used to play for 11-a-side team when I was back in Hereford, and now I've sort of moved nearer London. I play for an 8-a-side team. A bit of a yeah, try and keep a couple of clean sheets, but it doesn't always happen.
Yeah. And have you played recently with the lockdown and what's been happening in the world? Have you managed to play recently?
Yeah, actually, last week was my first game back in about 6 or 5 months or so. So yeah, it's good to play again. We didn't get the result we wanted, but yeah, it was nice just to play a bit of competitive sport again, really, because yeah, I've been trying to keep active, but it's not quite the same as a bit of competition, is it?
That's very true. And so, being from the West Midlands, is it a West Midlands club you support yourself?
So no, I'm actually, so I support Chelsea.
Okay.
So yeah, not really from my area, but yeah, it's like coming from Hereford, everyone would sort of support Hereford United, and they would also support like a Premier League team. So yeah, I'm a Hereford fan, but also a Chelsea fan as well. So yeah.
Where did the Chelsea connection come?
There wasn't really much of a connection. It was more, my dad is a Man United fan, and he was always persuading me to become a Man United fan. I remember him buying me like a Man United water bottle at one stage. I took to like football training and different things like that. And I think he sort of pushed me away from it more than anything. And I just wanted to support someone that wasn't Man United. And at the time, Chelsea were the team that were sort of challenging United the most. So that was kind of the reason I went in that direction. I sort of wanted that rivalry with my dad, that we could sort of watch them play and be supporting different teams. So,
what era of Chelsea was that? What was the Chelsea side at the time?
I'm going to get a bit of hate from this, because this is very much early Abramovich era. So very much when the money's coming in and you're getting Drogba and Arjen Robben and Cech and the light coming in, and it's all getting a bit exciting, really, for the Chelsea fans.
It was, absolutely. And there's been no looking back ever since, pretty much.
Yeah, no, we've, I think the best thing about it is we've always been pretty consistent, at least trying to get at least one trophy in a season, whether that's a Europa League or an FA Cup or something. We're always pretty good at, if we can't pick up the big ones, we go and try and get a smaller one somewhere.
A consistently well-dressed team, I always find Chelsea, and it's probably relevant with them being based in West London, but consistently well-dressed in nice kits, I find Chelsea.
Yeah, I always, obviously when I started supporting there in the Umbro era, and I enjoyed those kits, and then once they went to Adidas, it was, even though they're a bit templated at times, they were very clean and well-dressed kits. So very good looking things, I think.
Last season's black kit was a real highlight for me in recent years, and playing football up here in Glasgow, you see that shirt being worn quite often, and by people that I know myself that aren't Chelsea fans. So it's one of those kits that I think can cross divides and just wear, because it's a beautifully looking shirt. So Tom, can you tell people where they can find you online?
Yeah, of course. So my website is tomgriffiths.online. But you can also find me on all your social media sites. I'm Tom Griffiths Illustration on Instagram and Facebook, and I'm Art Tom Griffiths on Twitter.
And is there a particular social media platform that you would say you use yourself, or is best to follow you, or do you try and keep them all kind of progressing nicely?
Yeah, I try and keep them pretty busy. Probably if you want to see probably my best work, it's probably showed best on Instagram, really. Through stories and on feed as well.
Okay. And if people visit tomgriffiths.online, they'll find predominantly motorsport-based work there. Is there a reason for that your own website itself is focused on that work?
Yeah, so mainly a lot of the football work that I've done in the past, whether it be through Copper 90 or these football times, has either been through my in-house work or commission-based stuff. Typically that stuff, like, I obviously don't have the rights to sell. So I decided I wanted to go down a different direction with my the website and the prints that I sell on there. So, as I said, my main other passion is motorsport, and it's always been sort of a good creative outlet when I've, when everything else that I've been doing has been based around football. It's been quite nice to sort of switch that off for a second and go and do something motorsport based. And that's sort of what my website is revolved around. And then it sort of freshens me back up for when I go back and go back into my daily sort of football stuff.
Oh, great, because I was going to ask you today, balancing a role as a creator at Copper 90 and then Tom Griffiths, the individual illustrator, how do you balance that in terms of giving both streams of work your best approach and avoiding any kind of burnout and keeping your own mind fresh for your own personal work?
Yeah, it's tricky, I guess. The one good thing about my role at Copper 90 was I wouldn't always be doing illustration-based work all the time. It would very much, as I was working as part of the social media team there, so I'd be sometimes creating graphics, which would be used on their socials. Other times I'd be doing the sort of reactionary illustrations, which you'd more likely see on my social media sites. And then, yeah, I'd also just be helping out on any other social media needs they need one turn at a time, whether it be sort of analytical based or covering, yeah, live games. I remember especially like during major tournaments and Champions League nights would like live tweet and cover the games in more detail. So I'd be across those sort of things as well as doing my design stuff. So that in a way sort of meant that my full job wasn't fully illustration design, and then it meant, if I wanted to do something in my spare time, it wouldn't fully mean that I've spent my whole day doing illustration and I've come home and done something illustration based as well. So it meant that, I was doing a wider range of things, and it mixed it up a little bit for me, which was good.
Okay, great. So going a wee bit deeper into the role of a creator at Copper 90, can you give us a bit of an insight as to how that role works? And you've touched already that it's more than just working as an illustrator at Copper 90. And as part of that involve commissioning illustrators and creatives when the right brief comes in?
Yeah, so I guess the great thing about working for Copper 90 was I got to see both sides of the spectrum. So I got to, obviously being an illustrator, the illustrator who's commissioned myself, I get to see obviously that side of things and how a client comes to me and commissions me for a project. But then I also got to see the other side and see how I would deal with commissioning an illustrator to do something on that side. So that was always a really interesting thing to learn, and how to approach it, getting a better understanding of fees, also seeing how different illustrators work. I remember about 18 months ago now, we did some work just before the Women's World Cup, which was we were running an exhibition with 10 different artists, and it was really interesting to see how all of those 10 artists went through the process of getting the initial brief to then developing it and then getting towards the final stages of it as well, and getting an understanding of how they're working and how they're communicating with the client. That was fascinating to learn, and sort of I could sort of take little bits from each one and understand that I would do that different, or that's really clever, that's how I'd like to approach it as I go further. It was a really good learning curve, really, and something I guess a lot of illustrators don't have the luck to experience in a way, being sort of behind the scenes in that sense.
It must be quite invaluable having sat in that seat on the other side, knowing good practice in terms of as an illustrator, where to put your work so it can be found, and how to approach people that you would like to work with. With what I did before I went full time as an illustrator, I feel that I can look back and the job I used to do was essentially commission. Well, a part of that was commissioning illustrators. And so knowing how to essentially market yourself, because that is really an enormous part of being a freelance artist like yourself.
Yeah, definitely. I think, one of my main roles in that sort of commission side of things was if someone else on the other side of the company, a different sector of the company, was looking to commission someone, they would usually seek my help just to get an understanding of what illustrator would be best for this project, where would be best to look. And I would usually fire back with a couple of names that I think would be suitable for that project. So, yeah, it's always... interesting to see how different people market themselves and sort of the work they produce to market themselves as well. Because you get a real understanding of what the client needs are and whether that illustrator is suited for that job or not.
Okay, brilliant. Can you talk us through some of the work that you've done for Box Park in London? I've seen photos of you yourself stood next to your work, blown up in print, large format, and in installation, and in particular the beautiful Mo Salah portrait that you produced. Can you talk us through the work that you produced for them?
Yeah, of course. So that was actually part of a larger project which I did for my final major project in my final year of university. So it was came a good time really, because it was just before the Russia World Cup in 2018. So I decided to create a magazine preview, obviously looking at the 32 teams that were going to the World Cup. I created like an illustration for each team, looking at a specific player. So obviously Mo Salah was for Egypt. So I created the magazine and also created them as posters as well. And at that time, Box Park was, someone who saw it online and decided they wanted to use it as an exhibition during the World Cup. So I think it was there during July. It was really good because I remember, especially during that summer, there were some great scenes from Box Park of the England fans when goal would go in and you'll just have the beer sprayed all up in the air. It's quite cool to have my illustration sort of weaved into the background of those incredible scenes from that summer. That project was actually the main reason that I got my job at Copper 90 in the first place, because as I said, part of the project was creating that magazine, and I decided to get quite a few of them printed out, and I ended up selling a couple, but the ones I had left over I sent out to basically a load of companies that I would be interested in working for, and one of those was Copper 90, and they received it during the World Cup. And from there, they contacted me and I ended up going in for interviews and doing a few projects for them. Eventually was able to get my full-time role from that. So, yeah, it was a really good way, I guess, of branding myself and putting myself out there for different companies to sort of see my work, not just on a screen, but in a physical way. So, really, really fun project.
And a real ideal case study, an example of how a self-initiated project, and one that was from your time at university, which kind of adds even more weight to it being a unique case study in that produce a piece of work that you are very much invested in, and then where that can develop from there. So do you know where it was found online by Box Park at the time? Because it's always great to know where kind of certain pieces of work can be picked up in that way.
Yeah, 100%. I think it was either through my website at the time or through Behance. I think maybe Behance, because it really performed well on there as well, which I think is another really good site for artists and illustrators to sort of promote their work, I've only really just got back into posting my work on there as well. But I think it was there, it performed really well, and they sort of found me from there. And that was also the same way that Match of the Day magazine found my work as well. So yeah, that sort of project and putting it out in those different ways really helped me with sort of getting a few initial clients, and also obviously got me my job at Cop 90 as well.
That's fantastic you just bring up Match of the Day, because that will give everyone the impression that this podcast is well planned with lots of smooth handovers. But I was next going to ask you about your work for Match of the Day magazine, which for anybody with an interest in football, it's an iconic publication to work with. It's one I grew up with reading, and can you tell us about your work for them?
Yeah, so it was actually from exactly the same project. It was, they ended up wanting to use the Neymar illustration from that project, yeah, the Brazil one. And yeah, it was really enjoyable just to have a piece of work in a publication, which yeah, I'd grown up reading. It was always something I remember going to the news agents and always wanting that particular magazine and getting that when I got home. But yeah, it was actually used in their annual for that year. So it's, yeah, even more special than the weekly magazine they have. So yeah, it's really, really probably one of the, one of those ones where you're sort of growing up, and if you're thinking being in that sort of product would be, yeah, really, really amazing. So it's very fortunate to get that just after university as well.
And if people wanted to see that project as a whole, it's the best place to find that on Behance, would you say?
Yeah, so yeah, Behance would be the best place to find that, along with some of my more recent work. I've recently uploaded the sort of like past 2 years of work I've done with Copper 90. So yeah, it gives you a real sense of what I've been working on with them for the last 2 years.
That's great. And so if people go to Behance, is it a search of Tom Griffiths and they'll find you?
Yeah, it should be. If you want that specific project, if you search World Cup Post or World Cup Magazine, that should come up as well. Or yeah, you can just search Tom Griffiths and you should get about 8 or 9 projects that will come up from there.
I did want to pick you up on your Adidas concept boot illustration. I'm a real Adidas Predator man myself, and if I was to see that boot on a shelf, I think I would do very well to hold myself back from just handing over whatever it would cost to have that on my feet, even as a goalkeeper. Can you just jumping into that? Can you talk us about that illustration?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that was something I did for Copper 19. At the time, we were looking at different ways that I could create illustrations, which would be sort of like combined in a series of things. Because I remember late last year, we created a Frankenstein piece for Halloween. It sort of looked at what would make up your sort of like perfect player. So you'd have like the left leg of Messi and the right leg of Ronaldo, and maybe the head of Peter Crouch or something like that. And it would just be a really good way of getting engagement into a post. And obviously people would be commenting back what would make up their perfect player. So yeah, that was very much taking on that same sort of same idea and looking at what would make up your perfect Adidas or Nike boot. So yeah, for the Adidas one, there's a lot of predators involved in that one. But it's, yeah, going through throughout the history and looking at a range of different boots and sort of like who were the icons who wore those boots as well, and what makes it so iconic, and sort of like taking a little part of that boot and combining it with different parts of other boots to make a perfect boot. So it's a really fun project to do. And then later on, we also did something called Kit Clash, which was looking at different kits from the same club. So I think we did one on Dortmund and Fiorentina. With the Dortmund one, we'd be taking maybe a couple from the 90s and then maybe some of their more modern ones as well, and just combined in different bits of it. So it might be the right sleeve was really nice on the one, and then the collar was really special in another one, and we just combined them to sort of make this clash of kits, basically.
And I was really happy in the Dortmund example that you used the S. Oliver sponsor. I was talking to an individual on another podcast only yesterday about Dortmund kits and which Dortmund kit I would most love to add to my Wii collection. And it is the S. Oliver shirt from 97 to 98. So respect for
It was a tough choice because I think they had another sponsor maybe in the early 2000s or maybe earlier in the 90s, which was on some of their iconic kits as well. So it was, yeah, weighing up that and the S. Oliver one. But yeah, it was interesting because they very much had two iconic shirt sponsors when you go to like a club like Inter, or obviously known for just having Pirelli on theirs.
Yeah.
Yeah, you usually just think of one, but with Dortmund, with the research, we found out there was two that were pretty close. But S. Oliver, yeah, just about did it for me.
Very good. And going deep into kits just now, are there any standout kits for you from history that you either most enjoy wearing or you'd love to add to your own collection?
Yeah, so one of the main reasons why we started off with Dortmund for that was I really love all of those kits from the mid to late 90s that had sort of like a highlighter yellow with they're sort of almost like tiger stripes down the sleeves. And yeah, they're just some really classic kits from that era, especially the long sleeve ones as well. I think the sleeve designs they had during that period were really quite something. And then, yeah, as I said, they had some good sponsors as well. Yeah, I also enjoy a lot of the kits that Inter have had, especially in the last couple of years. I think with the Pirelli logo, it's just such an iconic look. And it's very clean with the Pirelli logo, but then they're always good at sort of getting the right color tone when it comes to the black and blue as well. So yeah, they always try and get it pretty spot on, really.
Absolutely. And the type based sponsor, Di Cantonale, I might have got the exact pronunciation wrong, but that logo, that sponsor, and it does show you how sponsors can really kind of lift a kit that much further up, you know, can feel so much part of the visual aesthetic as well as all the other elements as part of the kit. And that absolutely worked for sure.
Yeah, 100%. I think, as a Chelsea fan, I'm a bit disappointed that we've got a massive three on our kit at the moment. It just, it's not quite what I had in mind. And it's compared to what we've had in the past, like Samsung was quite a classy logo to have on the front. And we've had some nice ones in the past. I don't know, Fly Emirates was always quite a solid one to have on there as well. But
I was really into Yokohama Tyres as a sponsor as well, you know, because it's a different company, you know, a Japanese tyre company. Nice choice of type.
Yeah, just nice and clean. It sort of allows you to design other areas of the kit. When with the number three, it's just sort of a bit jarring really to look at. And I think with the kit they've got this year, there's no real other design on the sleeves or on the collar or anything. So all you're looking at are the Nike logo, the Chelsea logo, and then this massive three. So yeah, it's not quite worked. I'm hoping they can figure out in the next couple of years and maybe make it a little bit smaller or something.
How do you feel about Chelsea's third kit this year?
Yeah, it's not great. I remember seeing some leaked images of that a little while back, and I was just hoping that they were fake images. But they haven't done so well this year. The year before when they had the black kit, and I actually really liked the white one with the collar as well, which is our second kit. They did really well, and with the first as well, they had like the Stamford Bridge pattern across it as well. But they've sort of gone the wrong direction with this year's kit. I think they look a little bit like pajama tops in my opinion. But with the large collar and stuff. But last year they did well, but this year they dropped off a tiny bit.
And talking in that same area, what about football boots? Being a player yourself, what do you typically like to wear?
Yeah, so I was always an Adidas man. I guess being a Chelsea fan, and Lampard was always my sort of hero growing up, and he was always a Predator man. I remember, I guess, the 2006 World Cup was sort of the first one that I properly remember, and all of the sort of number 10s or midfield maestros that tournament, whether it be like Lampard, Gerrard, Zidane, Kaká, Riquelme, all of those players always wore the Predators, and I remember they always had such great campaigns with those players involved in them at the time as well. So yeah, always a Predator man, and then I enjoyed they had like the Adi Pures as well later on as well, which was a nice boot, quite a nice soft one that I remember wearing, nice soft and comfortable one when I was sort of playing 11-a-side. But yeah, those were sort of the main ones. Always an Adidas man, really.
Ah, very good. And moving back onto your own work as an illustrator, now you produced one of my absolute favourite These Football Times covers, and that's saying a lot given how well the publication does with its front covers. The Language of Football cover featuring Maradona, Cruyff, Zidane and Pele. Can you talk us through the process of how that happened?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, Omar's always pretty open when it comes to the brief, and sort of is very good at sort of letting me do a bit of research and figure out maybe where the best direction is to take this this cover. And yeah, it was very much the idea of the book on this plinth, and almost like all of the football information you could ever want to know is in this book. And these four outstanding players who you think could not learn anything else about the game are around it and almost mesmerized by the information they're receiving from this book. So that was sort of, I guess, the concept for it. And then yeah, when you're putting sort of four players of that caliber on a front cover, it's always going to look pretty decent as well. For me, it was probably the most enjoyable commission I've done so far for These Football Times. And it was really nice how unique that particular magazine was as well, in terms of the concept behind it and also the size of it as well. So it's one of the most like ambitious and unique projects I've done so far, I'd say.
And knowing what the content of that publication was and the format, how did that feed into your execution for the front cover?
Yeah, so it was important to get players from who had different languages as well. So you've got like French speaking, Spanish speaking, and so on the front cover. Also like not having any text apart from the title and the logo at the bottom was important as well, and just sort of using the cross and the arrow symbols as sort of the tactic ones as well. So I'm sort of like not adding any text to that book was important. Just trying to sort of make it look like you're going to get information. You could think you know everything about football, but all of a sudden here's this book and you're going to learn all these different phrases and all this different information about the game that you would never know unless you've traveled to those countries and or have some sort of fanatic fan from that country that you're aware of. It was a really fun cover to do because it was such an interesting concept as well.
And you created this great dreamlike scene with your textures and your choice of color palette, and having these four players who were held up as gods as such in the footballing world, and this book on a plinth and this kind of idea almost of it being this Bible as such that they're kind of enthralled within. You created this real kind of otherworldly dreamlike scene. Can you talk us through how you work technically? So the software and the hardware that you use to produce your work?
Yeah, of course. So pretty much 90% of my work is done in Adobe Photoshop. And I use a Wacom tablet, so I've got yeah, just a small tablet that I will draw on, and that I'll trace the information onto the computer. I guess my process is mainly I'll start off either digitally or just with a little sketch pad, and I'll do a really, really rough drawing, which if you saw them, you would not have a clue what's going on.
Mine are exactly the same.
But it's, very much just to get an understanding of the composition and maybe a little bit of the lighting, and get an understanding of how everything's going to be laid out. And then from that, I'll, go onto Photoshop and sort of figure out everything from there, starting off with like a line drawing or everything. And then once I've got the proportions and the composition right on that, I'll then begin to add color and then go into sort of the shading and highlighting of everything as well, which is the lighting is probably the main, the most important stage really of the process.
Well, talking of compositions and details, the Arsenal cover that you also produced for these Football Times that has such a gorgeous amount of detail, especially in the tabletop kind of North London map. Can you talk us through that as a piece of work?
Yeah, of course. I think something that during my time at Copper Knight I've sort of begin to understand is like how you can try and put in as many, I guess they call them Easter eggs, into the image as well. So like little things that you look into a little bit more detail and you think, oh yeah, that's related to that, and so on. With that one, it was very much trying to include as many little Easter eggs in there as well. So I had sort of like a table with the map there, showing everywhere around Arsenal, and I had like the miniature cannon and different details like that, which were just to sort of try and link everything that was going to be in the image with Arsenal. Whether it was, I remember with that one, I had the sort of like pattern in the background, which was like a design off one of the old crests as well. Just really, really small details like that, that once a fan of the club has got hold of the magazine, they'll be able to look at the cover and like look at it in more detail and fully understand every sort of element of it as well. So I thought that was a really important part of the process really.
And in terms of the brief for that cover, was that again open for you to direct it, or were you given any instructions as to wanting to show Bergkamp and Henri and Premier League trophy? Was there any guidance in terms of the brief, or was that open to you again?
So it was mainly to make sure that Bergkamp and Thierry Henry were there, and to show that they were sort of like the two kings of Highbury. It was making sure they were part of it, and then I could sort of weave in anything after that. So whether it be the Invincible trophy and obviously the kits they're wearing and so on. Just making sure that both of those are centre stage really.
Yeah. And just jumping on and looking at some of your non-football related work, a piece of work of yours, the Tuscan Grand Prix poster that you've produced recently, a really beautiful piece of work that's kind of exploring using typography as a kind of visual element in your illustration work. Can you talk us through that as a self-initiated piece of work?
Yeah, sure. So, I guess the background behind it is with the global pandemic at the moment, Formula One's going to a lot more historical classic tracks. So I wanted to sort of create posters around each of them, and Mugello and Tuscany was the first one this weekend. And I've always had a keen interest, and it's always been a big inspiration of mine, is classic motorsport posters from the 70s and 80s and a bit further back from that as well. And also motorsport ad campaigns as well from that era. They've always got sort of a very clever use of composition and very good use of typeface as well. I tried to combine those elements into this one. Using the flow of Mugello and that sort of curled into the track that I created, and it was sort of represented the track as well, because it was one that's very much flowing in the hills, So yeah, it was a nice little side project that I decided to do over the next couple of months. I was very much focusing more on the composition and font than maybe the illustration elements that I typically focus on. So it was nice to combine some of my design skills with my illustration skills as well on that one.
And do you find by producing as much motorsport related content as you do that challenges you in terms of your skills, because you've got a great ability to capture vehicles in the same way that you can capture portraits, but there's obviously very different inherent challenges in drawing and illustrating those. Do you find that's important in helping you develop your skills and to push yourself?
Yeah, definitely. So especially like going back to football, you're typically going to have a face involved in there. So getting across a sense of emotion is always quite easy with the footballers in a way, because they've always got that face that you can play with, and any other elements that you might be looking at or interacting with. But yeah, with motorsport, it's like one of those sports where the emotion is difficult to tell in a way, because they're in a car, they've got a helmet on, so you can't see their face. So sort of trying to capture the mood and the tone of an image is always, I guess, more difficult with motorsport. Trying to, I guess, play around with the colours in an interesting way, or very much get sort of the shape of the car and the composition of the car in sort of like a dynamic way is always sort of an important part of the process, really, when doing my motorsport work.
Okay, fantastic. And jumping on to the most recent issue, the Marseille issue of the publication that includes your full page action portrait of Dimitri Payet striking a free kick. Can you talk us through how you approach that piece of work? Because of the viewpoint that you've given yourself, there's a real great sense of dynamism to it, and it's more almost kind of figurative based as opposed to kind of straight portrait based. So can you talk us through that brief?
Yeah, 100%. So I think with that one, I almost wanted to get away from some of the portrait, like the composition of some of the previous ones I've done for these sort of times was very much a portrait, which would be sort of shoulder height up. And I wanted to try and get away from that and create something with a bit more, something that's a bit more dynamic and showed a bit more motion to it. And that was sort of the direction I took with that. And I sort of wanted to still have quite an interesting view where the view is almost below Payet, almost on the ground, looking up at him. He's doing his typical free kick that he's so good at. That was very much the inspiration for that, to try and sort of get away from that composition I'd been using for some of the other commissions, and try and get something where you're getting a full sense of the speed and the posture that Payet's going into his free kick with.
Oh, fantastic. And was there any specifics given to you with that brief once again, or was it open to your own direction?
So with that one, it was very much to show like the skill and the magic that Payet possesses. Trying to give that sense of how skillful he is, how good free kick taking is as well, because obviously that's something he's sort of known for during his West Ham days and now during his Marseille career as well.
And how was that for you as a Chelsea fan, doing a portrait and celebrating a former West Ham hero?
I don't know, because to be fair, I did enjoy Payet's time in the Premier League. It was a very weird season when I remember it was the Leicester season when they won the league. So you had Mahrez and Payet were sort of the two players at the time. So it was one of those seasons where everything sort of flipped on its head and was quite interesting. And he sort of left in a bit of a bad tone with the West Ham fans as well. So it wasn't too bad to create something.
He endears himself a wee bit more to you then.
Exactly, yeah.
Did you catch any of Le Classique the other night?
I saw a couple of the highlights, yeah, and it looked a little bit frantic towards the end of the game.
It was tasty. Yeah, it was. I first game this season that I sat down and watched, and it was a good choice. And I watched it with the latest issue on my lap, flicking through it. So I was enjoying that very much. So looking ahead, what would be a dream brief for Tom Griffiths if you got a phone call 10 minutes after this from whoever it could be? What would that be? Just putting you on the spot.
I guess, like, with the match of the day one, it would be quite cool to do something else based around my childhood. I'm not sure what that product would be, but something that I've sort of used as a youngster. I've looked up to that sort of company or that product, and now I'm sort of designing something for them.
Carry on.
I guess the other area would be everything that I've done so far has been based on football orientated. So obviously with my passion in motorsport, it would be exciting to do something in that realm at some stage as well.
Oh, okay. What the first part of the answer talking about whatever it could be, but something that you have a real kind of emotive connection to. That really means something to you and has been part of your life and your love of the sport.
Yeah, 100%. I remember with COP90, we did some work with Panini. It wasn't more social based stuff, but a company like that where there's sort of like a link to my childhood, or I've enjoyed this product, I've enjoyed this company in the past, and they're sort of just like Match of the Day, something that I've looked up to as a kid, would be very cool to design something for them.
Oh, very good. So when do you next get to put your boots back on? When's your next scheduled match?
I haven't got one planned at the moment. I was actually supposed to be joining the team, which was just before lockdown came. So it was sort of February time, and we were supposed to be starting in April, but that got called off, obviously. And then I think they're waiting. They use a school facility, so I think we have to wait until schools have reopened, which they are now at the beginning of this month. So hopefully that will start maybe the end of this month. It'd be good to have a few more regular games, because, like I said, I've only played once last week since lockdown.
And sorry, would that be an 11-a-side team?
No, so that again, would be 8-a-side.
Okay.
So, try and keep my weekends free with the 11-a-side at the moment. I just want to do the evening exercise. I find quite fun, but hopefully we can get a game in the next couple of weeks.
And how would you describe yourself as a player?
I'm a centre back. It's funny that people, when I was playing for some of the Copper 90 sides, I used to be called John Stones, which I always found a bit weird, because he's supposed to be, he's not the best defender, but he's good at playing the ball out from the back, which would probably be the opposite of me, that I'm decent at defending, but not the best at playing out from the back. Maybe not him, but I don't know. I fancy myself as a bit of a Ricardo Carvalho or someone like that.
Nice.
Maybe not the leader of the defence, but someone who sort of sits nicely next to the leader at centre-back, who can sort of mop up behind, so...
Well, my next question was going to be, are there any players that you would like to highlight as being centre-back heroes for you?
John Terry is, as a Chelsea fan, always up there. But I always appreciated Carvalho and sort of what he brought to the team as well. He was always very underrated. More recently, probably Gary Cahill is a standout, I think. Like, when we won the Champions League, he'd only been there for about 6 months after joining from Bolton, and he sort of like just completely levelled up his game in those sort of that short period, and it was quite impressive to see, especially when he was playing next to someone as kamikaze as David Luiz. He was always a solid option at the back, really.
Absolutely, and I hope he comes back from his injury at the moment, because I think he's got quite a long-term injury, so hoping to see him back in a Palace shirt sometime soon. Fantastic, Tom. So can you please remind us where people can find you online?
Yeah, of course. So my website is tomgriffiths.online, and my Instagram and Facebook are Tom Griffiths Illustration, and my Twitter is A.R. Tom Griffiths.
Fantastic. Brilliant. So, Tom, it's been great speaking to you today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Russ. It's been great to be on the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.